Hi, everybody. This is Shamira Young with you from Zenjoyable.com, and I'm bringing you our Pro Photographer Interview Series, episode number 6. Today's interview is with Scott Wyden-Kivowitz. Now, Scott is the community and blog wrangler at Photocrotty.com. He's a blogger, a photographer, and an educator who runs a freelance photography business in New Jersey. Now, for today's interview, Scott actually went the extra mile and provided his written answers to the interview questions. So you will find very detailed show notes for this episode. And we thank you so much for that, Scott. So without further ado, let's get to the awesome interview. Hi, everybody. I'm hanging with Scott, and I'm so excited to just chill and chat with him. I want to thank you, Scott, for just taking time out of your schedule to share your photography expertise with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And actually, first of all, I'm going to have you say your entire name for us, because I'm going to mess it up. How do you say your full name?
So my full name is Scott Wyden-Kivowitz. I go by Scott Wyden for the most part, I'm happy to share why, but Scott Wyden-Kivowitz is my full name.
Okay, and you said you're happy to share why. I'm curious.
Yeah, so my biological father passed away when I was 2, and I learned later in life that he was a very huge fan of photography. He was a hobbyist, not a professional anyway, and so it's sort of and my grandfather as well, his father, was definitely a hobbyist. So I have both of their cameras. They're basically what got me started in photography. And to honor both of them, I use Wyden as my photography, name, even though my legal last name is Kivowitz. So.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that about you. How cool is that?
Yeah. So it's sort of like a pen name in a way.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, thanks for setting that straight for us. I know your name got a little bit mangled in an earlier interview, so
okay.
Yeah.
It happens.
All right. Well, first, I want our audience to really learn about you. Give us an overview of yourself, your background, how you ended up where you are now as a photographer.
Yeah, so I started with photography in high school. I did not focus on it whatsoever. I took some photo classes. I went to a very small high school. I graduated with 89 people. Very small high school.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah, there was under 400 kids in the school. So it was a very small high school. And so I didn't focus on photography at all in high school. I did take photo classes, but I actually was focusing on music, and I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston right out of high school. And so I was doing that, decided I didn't like Berklee, so I came back home and went to a county school here in New Jersey. And after a couple of years of focusing on music, I decided I don't want to do music for the rest of my life. So I switched to photography, and turned out that the county school I was going to actually has the best photo department in the state.
Wow.
And actually one of the largest and one of the most funded, which was crazy. So every student you had to use your own SLR 35 millimeter, but every student had their own rented, free rented large format and medium format camera. So, it was a fantastic learning experience. So, while I was going to school, I was assisting a variety of photographers, mostly portrait photographers, no events. So I did some fashion work. I did some corporate work, things like that. I was also working part-time for a forensic photography company.
Oh, wow.
Which was interesting. So I saw some nice and not so nice things.
Oh.
Yeah. And when I got out of there, I actually worked for 6 years. When I finished college, I spent 6 years working for the largest camera warranty company in the world, they still exist. They're still located in my hometown. So it was nice to be able to just go, walk right there. But so I spent 6 years there, still shooting, of course, on my own, working in the photo industry. And then after 6 years, I left. I actually was not in the photo industry for a small period of time. And I was contacted by Photocrotty to see if I was looking for a job, which I wasn't. Mm-hmm. But the rest is history. So I'm now at Photocrotty, and I'm still shooting on my own for my freelance business, doing mostly portrait work and landscape work and corporate work and things like that, and then doing the community and blogging for Photo Karate.
You know, you have quite a history. I was reading about you on your website, and I couldn't help but be just a little bit jealous. You know, it's kind of everyone's dream to be contacted out of the blue by a company that already does what you love, and then they want to insert you into their culture. That is just awesome.
Yeah, so my wife and I were literally driving to this barbecue place for dinner, which we always wanted to try, and we're driving there, and we now like to say that the job didn't just land in my lap, but it was thrown at my lap, because it really did come out of the blue. It was total shocker. Mm-hmm. I was literally not looking for a job. I was fairly happy with what I was doing, even though it wasn't the photo industry. And I couldn't be happier now. I mean, it takes two of my favorite things, photography and WordPress, and mashes them together on a daily basis. And mm-hmm. it's definitely the job for me. And I'm so happy that I was given the opportunity to even be considered for it.
Awesome. Okay, so it sounds like you've done several forms of photography, landscape, portrait photography. How would you describe your current style? What do you do the most of right now?
Yeah, so for myself, mostly, I'm doing landscape photography. And I don't really have a style, per se. I just go out there and if I see something that looks inspiring that I want to make into a photograph, I will do it. I do a lot of long exposure photography with my landscapes, and I do a lot of long exposure photography education along with that. But portrait-wise, I've been compared to Lee Friedlander sometimes.
Okay.
Lee Friedlander, I actually did my final, one of my final projects for college was actually replicating a Lee Friedlander style, and it came a little bit easier to me because I do see myself, or I do see him in me, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
and so I've been compared to that, but I don't know. I really don't have a style per se. I know a lot of people say they have a style or a cinematic or this or that. And mm-hmm. I just make photographs and whatever is in my head I want to get out there, or whatever inspires me in the moment, I'll do it. And that's really about it. Yeah.
Okay. And speaking of inspiration, I'm so glad you mentioned that. How do you get yourself inspired for a photo shoot or a project?
Yeah. So this is a lot of fun. I'm a huge advocate for social media. Mm-hmm. I'm on social media every day, all day. We all have it on our phones now, whether we like it or not. So I'll spend time, depending on what I'm photographing, if it's for myself, I'll go certain places. If it's for, a job that I'm shooting, I'll go somewhere else and be more specific about what I'm looking for. But most of the time, in general, I'll spend time browsing Google Plus communities, mm-hmm. because the communities is where you can find the niche. So if I want to be inspired by something long exposure, I'll go to the long exposure community on Google Plus.
Hmm.
Or if I want to find something that's HDR, I'll go to the HDR community on Google Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a great place. Actually, whenever I have time, I do weekend shares. Saturdays and Sundays, I do 3 shares of photos that are inspiring me on Google Plus. So if anybody wants to follow me on Google Plus, every Saturday and Sunday, you'll see some new, some fresh photography that inspires me that I think is worth sharing. But I'll also go to 500 Pixels. Now, 500 Pixels came out as a competitor of Flickr in a way, and the comments that you get when you share photos on 500 Plus are not very helpful sometimes. They're just like, hey, great photo, check out mine.
Mm-hmm.
So not helpful in any way. But the photography that gets shared there, a lot of it is just amazing. So 500 Pixels I'll go to, and I'll look at a certain category, or I'll look at just what's upcoming or what's popular, editor's choice, and usually that stuff is just amazing. So that is always inspiring. It makes you want to do better. And Flickr, of course, it's been around forever for photographers to share and and whatnot. It's probably my last on the list of any place I would go to now, because it's, I feel like Flickr has a long way to get back to compete with their new competition. You know, like they're now the underdog when they used to be the forefront company. So I'll do that. But then there's like, have you ever heard of Austin Kleon?
I have not.
Yeah, so he's the author of Steal This Art. Great book. Basically where it's saying, he's saying, you know, here's artwork. Now I want you to take this and make it your own. So not saying just copy the book. He's saying be inspired by this art and turn it into your own art. You can do the same thing, but make it your own way. So, like, one of his quotes is, you are, in fact, a mashup of what you choose to let into your life. And I think that says inspiration very well. So, I try to do that. Like, I'll look at something and be like, wow, how can I do that? Or how can I do it different? And I'll experiment with lighting and whatnot. Or if I'm doing landscape, I'll mess with what filters I'm using and things like that. Or the post-processing style. Mm-hmm. I'll look at what other people are doing and see if I can do it in my own way.
Awesome. You know, you just gave a list of a few really great resources there. We'll definitely have to include those in the show notes for people who want to check those out. Mm-hmm. And also, one thing I really like with you searching for inspiration via social media channels that you mentioned, it's really accomplishing two purposes there, because you're getting inspired, but there's also that aspect of marketing that you're incorporating into your business as well. And I think that's just super, super important. And I think a lot of photographers, I mean, myself included, we can really struggle with the social media aspect of it, especially when we want to be out on the field taking photos. But really, the marketing is just as important.
Oh, yeah. And for depending on what you're trying to do with your photography, if you're trying to make it into a full-time business, not everybody has the time for the social media. So
right.
That gets very difficult. And there really is no easy way to manage that time, but
You know,
it is important, very important.
It is. I just had an interview with Christine Lee Smith, and she's up on Zenjoyable under the interview series. And one thing she mentioned was that one of the things she wished that she really knew in the beginning about professional photography is that taking the photos is just a portion of what you will be doing, and if you really want to grow it out to, you know, a bigger business, then it takes marketing, it takes social media, you know, it takes handling your finances. A lot of photographers will try to do it themselves, which for some people is fine, but a lot of them have to learn the hard way that they either have to build a team or just find ways to work more efficiently at those other aspects.
Oh, yeah. So here's something interesting on that sort of the same line. Every so often I'll host different events around New Jersey. I have a Google Plus community for New Jersey photographers, and we try to get together and go on photo walks or have certain events. And one of the new ones that I'm doing is basically a photo Q&A in person, and we're trying to do it at photographer studios. Photographers actually have studios. Mm-hmm. Trying to do it there, where the community can come and ask these photographers who are doing it full time whatever questions they want.
Oh, and that's awesome!
Just a very informal, relaxed, hey, we're in a studio, that's pretty cool type of environment, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a very well-known photographer, Vanessa Joy, who lives in the town next to me. And she gives classes on, her and her husband actually give classes on Creative Live and all these like big, you know, online places. And she teaches at, I think, WPPI and things like that. And very well-known wedding photographer, her and her husband. Her husband does the video aspect. And so they're building a new studio, so we couldn't do it at their studio, but she played the role of the first host for this new event that I'm doing. And so we sat down, and one of the questions that we asked was along the lines of the time and how you go about the business without killing yourself, really. And so she has a team that will handle a lot of the post-production work, and she'll either send it out, actually, she'll send it out to another a third party who will do the editing for her and send it back, or she'll have her team do it. So that actually takes a lot of the time off of her, so she can keep shooting because the bride and groom want her to shoot. They don't want her her assistants to shoot.
Right.
And at the same time, she also offers a service where she does on-site during the wedding editing.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And she charges a lot of money for this because it's very difficult and extremely stressful.
Yeah.
But her whole routine of how she goes about things changes with this. So it really does matter. It does make a difference of what your business is, what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need to do the post-production by yourself? It really depends, you know?
But that's a great question.
Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
Yeah. I think everyone initially makes the assumption that they do. And, you know, myself included, especially in the beginning, we don't realize that it's okay to send the work out at times. You know, you have to really maximize your time.
And this is definitely the case for wedding photographers where your time is very limited.
Oh, yes.
And you've got albums to create and you've got so many other things and in-person meetings to do and selling to do and whatnot. So, you know, but for someone like me where I'm mostly doing landscapes and I'm mostly doing one-off portraits for businesses,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'll do it myself. I don't mm-hmm. need to send it out. But it all depends on what you're doing, what your needs are.
Right. And kudos to her, by the way, for even doing. I've heard of photographers doing on-site editing. That's something I have not yet attempted at a wedding because it is so chaotic at times. And, you know, it's kind of like you're playing dual roles at a wedding. You're the photographer, but you're also kind of, at least in my experience, gathering up and organizing everybody and letting them know where they need to be, because of course everyone scatters and disperses, and it's kind of like you're running things a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely intense. You know, she was talking about it at this event. She actually teaches how to do it effectively, so
oh, wow.
or efficiently, I should say.
Wow.
So yeah,
awesome,
interesting stuff.
Yeah, if I'm ever in the Jersey area, I'm gonna have to look into that definitely. Well, next, let's talk about the tools of the trade. Tell us, what's your typical go-to gear for your shoot, for a photo shoot or even a photo walk? What do you like to bring with you?
Yeah, so it definitely depends on the situation, like everything else. If I'm doing landscape work, then my gear is going to be very different than if I'm doing portrait work.
Mm-hmm.
I do use a Nikon D800. I love that camera. I used to have two D700s.
Mm-hmm.
I have sold them both. And currently, I only have one DSLR because I don't really have the volume where I need the extra body or the faster body or whatever. So I decided to go the gear rental route for when I need to.
Okay.
But so I'm using a D800 body. For landscapes, I'm using a 20mm Nikon, a 24-70, and a 70-200. So I have my entire range covered, and I use the Lee Filters neutral density kits, that whole slide-in filter style.
Nice.
Cable release and Really Right Stuff tripod. That's typically what's with me for that. And for sometimes I'll mix it up and go all primes. So I'll go 20mm, 35, 50, and 85 instead,
mm-hmm. gotcha.
Instead of the heavier lenses. But it's fun, like, especially with the photo walk, it's fun to change it up and do the primes.
Mm-hmm.
My typical portrait, I will have the 85mm and a 70-200, and I usually have a 24-70, even though I really rarely use that for portraits. If I ever needed it for worst case scenario, if something happened to the other lenses, I'd have that with me.
Okay.
And then Pocket Wizards, they're my triggers of choice. I will never go to another brand. And Alien Bees, Luma Pro, Small Flash, and Nikon strobes, and then various light modifiers depending on what I need.
Nice. So, very yeah. nice. So out of all that, what is your favorite accessory other than your camera?
Yeah, so very interesting question, and the answer is going to be even more interesting. My favorite accessory is the Color Checker Passport.
Oh.
X-Ray. And the reason is because I'm colorblind.
Really? So, oh, that is interesting.
Yeah, so I've written about this on my website, and I've always dealt with it, and especially going to school for photography, taking color classes, how does someone who's colorblind get through that?
Wow.
So the Color Checker Passport is definitely the best because it helps me. I still don't know if my colors are, you know, very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I can tell, but my colorblindness is really when two similar colors are, like, if there's an orange and a brown that are similar shades, they'll look like one for
me. Okay.
So it helps me just make sure that I'm as close as can be with colors.
And actually, I want to dig into that a little more just to make sure our audience and myself understands, because we hear about color blindness all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So for you then, specifically, is it always, can it be any color? If there's two next to each other that are similar, like a light blue and a medium blue, can it be any color, or are there particular colors?
It's really any color that is just very similar. So a dark navy blue next to black looks the same to me.
Okay. Okay.
So
when did you find out that you were colorblind?
Oh, when I was young. My biological father was also colorblind. Same exact, some people call it color deficient instead of colorblind.
Okay.
But I don't know, to each his own. So my biological father has had the same exact thing. So I've known forever. And I've always had my mom making sure that I've matched, and now my wife makes sure that I matched. I tend to wear the same colors with all my clothing, just to make sure that I'm okay. And actually in college, I was lucky enough that I had my color photography professors would help. They'd say, add another filter or make it a little longer. You know, that they'll sort of nudge me a little bit to help me out.
So. Were you the only one in your class that was dealing with that? Yeah.
It's common for photographers, but not that common. I actually have a friend, Brian Matias. He's actually the Google Plus Photos community manager.
Okay.
And he's very colorblind. He can't see red. So,
oh, my favorite color. No.
Yeah. So his photography is amazing. I love his photography. And I always forget that he's a lot worse than I am with it. And one time we were walking around New York City, and we were just, you know, shooting and having a blast. And I was like, check out that woman's coat. And it was like this bright red, huge dress. And he's like, where? And I forget that I'm colorblind while I'm shooting. And I forget that he's colorblind. I actually know a variety of photographers that are colorblind. So it's interesting. It's out there.
Yeah. You're the first one that I've personally talked to that's colorblind. That's so fascinating. Oh, now I want to look up a percentage or something to see what percentage of photographers are colorblind. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, no problem. There is actually a website, colorblindphotographer.org or .com or something. It's another colorblind photography website. So
awesome. I'm going to have to check that out. Now, tell us next about your post-production workflow. Can you describe what your process is like after you've finished up a photography shoot? What kind of software you use? Any of that?
Yeah, so I am always in Adobe Lightroom. That's where my catalog is. That's where all of my digital negatives are. I always shoot in RAW. So I always import to DNG.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything is organized by, I go year and then month and then day. I know that some people think that's silly, but I have, that little bit of OCD where I have to have it organized like that. And so I keep everything in Lightroom. I do most of my core edits in Lightroom. And then I will typically, if I need some extra work, I will bring it into Onum Software's Perfect Photo Suite, which version 8 just came out, and it's amazing.
Hmm.
And I'll typically use that. And then if I need to, I sometimes dread it, but Photoshop. I can't stand Photoshop, but I gotta have it. It's part of the trade.
I'm curious, why don't you like Photoshop?
It's just, it has so much more than what's needed for the average photographer, and it's a lot slower for when you need to do many photos. But right currently, it's the best way to do panoramics.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best way to do focus stacking. There's no other options. I have a feeling, knock on wood, that Onum Software will add those features in the future. I just knocked on my desk and my cat just thought that there was someone at the door. So typically I'm between Lightroom and Onum Software. Sometimes I go into Photoshop, and then depending on the situation, if I need, I don't like Adobe Lightroom's noise reduction, so I'll bring it into Nik Define,
mm-hmm.
which now Google makes. And sometimes I used to use Topaz Labs a lot. I don't use them as much, but sometimes, you know, they're there and I'll use them for certain things. But yeah, so that's typically my two of software of choice is Lightroom and Onone Software.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a Photoshop junkie, but I totally agree. It can be slow. It really can be, especially when you're working through a heavy bulk of photos. Next, let's talk about the lessons that you've learned throughout your professional history as a photographer. What would you say is the most common mistake that you see professional photographers make, or that you yourself have made?
So, using the wrong lighting for the wrong situation. Mm. As far as the photography process goes, mm-hmm. using the wrong lighting for the wrong situation. I've done it. We've all done it.
Yeah.
The trick is to learn from it. Whether you need to use natural light or whether you need six lights versus one light, things like that. One of the things I started doing recently was just simplifying. So now when I go out on engagement sessions, I will actually have a friend or an assistant or whoever hold a pop-up reflector, a Lastalight reflector, one with like a hand grip, which makes it easy to hold for one person, and mm-hmm. bounce a strobe off of it. And there's my big softbox without carrying a big softbox. So mm-hmm. I do that, and I'll backlight with another strobe, and so just simplifying instead of trying to compensate when you don't need to. But then again, knowing when you do need to compensate. So as far as the photography process goes, that's what I would say. It's just not using light the correct way. Mm-hmm. And learning from it is important, and there's so many ways to learn from it. But for business-wise, there's actually a very big mistake that I see a lot of people doing, a lot of photographers doing, and it's reading and learning the wrong SEO advice and implementing horrible practice like comment spamming and keyword stuffing. And
interesting, okay.
It gets done so often, it's out of hand, and... one of the things that we do at Photocrati is actually educate on the proper way to do SEO. So it drives me nuts when I see it taught the incorrect way. Mm-hmm. And so we try to clear things up for people whenever we can.
Excellent. Good stuff. All right. And in your opinion, what makes a good photo stand out from an average photo?
So a good photo shows the care and passion in the framing mm-hmm. of the scene, the exposure. Is it just a boring postcard exposure, or was something done to make it dramatic? Mm. What processing was done to it? You can tell if thought and care went into it versus someone just pointing, clicking, and sharing it on social media.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely.
That doesn't inspire other people. They want to see the care behind a photograph.
Right. And one thing I say is even if people, sometimes they can't quite put their finger on why they like a particular photo, especially non-photographers, or they'll look at it and they, on some level, they recognize that the framing, that there's more care in the framing or even the angle or the lighting, that they recognize that instantly, even if they can't immediately verbalize why they like it. They know why they like it. And our job as professional photographers is to capture that, and to take such care in those details that really make a huge difference. So now tell us, what is the one thing you wish you knew before you went professional as a photographer?
I wish that I knew the right gear to purchase instead of buying, trying, and selling until I got it right. A lot of us do that. Zacharias, photographer out of Atlanta, amazing photographer. Talks about this. He calls it gear acquisition syndrome or GAS. he talks about this a lot. He actually has a Kelby training course on this too. He talks about the fact that he went bankrupt. He literally went bankrupt buying the gear that he thought he needed.
Oh my goodness.
When he didn't. And he went bankrupt and managed to get back into it and now is doing things the right way. And I wish that I knew that too. I didn't go bankrupt, fortunately, but... I have definitely made mistakes about buying things I didn't need. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I wish that, whether it was in college or whether it was while I was assisting and whatever, that I was taught, you know, you don't need this or you do need this or, you know, what's worth it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there is, even on the flip side of that, I think there's quite a bit of pressure that we even put on ourselves to have the best gear. I mean, I'm certainly guilty of it. Or even if I'm out somewhere shooting, even just for fun, and another photographer might walk by, and if their lens is, you know, their lens is bigger than my lens, and I'm looking at my camera, and I'm like, oh, you know, it's, or they have better gear than I have, then I put that pressure on myself instantly. And, I mean, you're right, money is only, you know, it's not infinite, and you do run out at some point. And so really, you know, it's about maximizing the gear that you have. Definitely. Definitely. Now, is there a particular photography resource? And you've mentioned a bunch in this interview. I can't wait to get those all in the show notes. But are there a couple that you'd like to highlight for us? A particular photography resource, a tool, book, software that you would recommend to our listeners today?
Oh, I can give you a list. So I'm actually working on something new on my website that has a bunch of these listed. So I'm actually working on best of business, best for business for photographers.
Perfect.
Like sort of an awards type thing where every year I'm going to just say these are the websites who have created products that I feel are worth noting for the new year. And I'm actually going to be January 7th, 2014 is when I'm going to have this list posted. But, and we're actually working on one for Photocrati as well, an award. But so some of the ones that I would say are Jamie Swanson, the Modern Tog.
Mm-hmm.
She talks about the business and marketing and social media and all these things, and has all these products like accounting products and email templates, things that can really help a photographer's business for sale. And she does a lot of free education on her blog as well. So the Modern Tog, Rachel Branke, the Law Tog.
Mm-hmm.
So she's actually a lawyer and a photographer. And so her whole website, although she goes into some business and marketing stuff as well, and I think I guest blogged there about SEO once, but the go-to resource for me for any legal advice, contracts, anything I need around the legal aspects of a photography business.
Excellent.
She's who I would recommend. Preveal is an iPad app for helping to sell canvas prints or just framed prints or anything in person through your iPad to your client. And it does it in such a cool way, sort of like augmented reality without it being real time. It's sort of, you take a picture of your client's wall and you can actually mock up how collages would look or just single prints in exact size. It's a really nice, cool app. And it's actually kind of pricey, but the return on the investment is huge if you actually sell a print.
Mm-hmm.
Tiffinbox.org. My friend Seishu runs this. It's a fantastic blog, has interviews like what you're doing. It has lots of different advice from around business and the shooting styles and things like that. Steel Toe Images, Angela Poynton, a good friend of mine, fantastic educator. She talks about marketing, business, all for creatives. Of course, there's Google Plus. you really can't let that go. Google Plus is larger than Twitter now. They're just under Facebook, so it's here to stay. And then, of course, all the Photocrati websites. I got to plug the company I work for.
Of course.
We actually talk about a lot about business and SEO and stuff on the Photocrati blog. The Photographers SEO Community is where we talk about SEO mostly. And Next Gen Gallery. We have a WordPress plugin that has almost 10 million downloads. We're approaching 10 million downloads, which is crazy.
Oh my goodness. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. We acquired it about a month before I came on board. We acquired it with, I think, 4 million or so downloads, and we're just about to hit 9. So it's pretty awesome. And then we released a premium version of it, which has some cool gallery styles. We're adding e-commerce into that and stuff like that. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, last but certainly not least, tell us where we can find you, your website, any online courses or products that you'd like to mention.
Yep. So my website is scottwyden.com. And I'm everywhere on social media, Scott Wyden as well. So at Scott Wyden or, you know, whatever you go, just search for me and I'll be there.
Great.
If you go to my website, there's actually link to long exposure photography education. So I have some ebooks on a variety of things. I have Lightroom and Onward software presets, and I also have a Udemy course as well on long exposure photography. So that's all around there. And so, yeah, scottwyden.com and thephotocrody.com. You can find all that, all of our stuff there and whatnot. So
awesome. Awesome. Well, just thank you, Scott, for just chatting with us and providing so many awesome resources. We just really appreciate you talking to us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. It was a blast.